Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. This is Sally O'Forty, and welcome to Band Back Beats 2013, the only show with a deadline. We are trying to band back beats this year because they are 100% poison, because they are injurious and or deadly. And because we know now that the intent is to give the diseases they claim to prevent, nothing is stopping us but inaction. And the lady that I'm going to be interviewing today is a woman I have the greatest admiration for, and she certainly has an immense following. Her name is Dr. Rebecca Carley, and I'm thrilled to have you on today, Rebecca. Before you say anything, I just want to say we are on freedomslips.com. Revolution Radio, and we want you to push the support button and give what you can afford to, $5, $10, every little bit keeps Revolution Radio on the air. Thanks to all of you. Please welcome my guest, Dr. Rebecca Carley.
Thank you for another opportunity to be on your show, Sally.
Well, you know, this is like old home week for me at this point. I'd like to tell people a little bit of the history of our coming together. It's a little strange, but I want people to know. For many years, I produced comedy shows in hospitals and homeless shelters, which brought me to a TV station before I produced Museum of Comedy Presents. And I read an article in the window of the office. And I was so taken aback by this article that I said, past 20 years, I've been doing comedy so that I could get to this point, so I could read this article and feel this unfathomable connection to this woman. Well, I made my children read it. Normally, I don't make them read. You're going to stand there and read that whole article. Well, it just upset me more profoundly than anything I've ever read in my whole life. And so years go by. I understand eventually that vaccines are the cause of so many children's woes, including my own sisters. And I've interviewed Dr. Rebecca Carley 4 times on my previous show that I had for her expertise on a multitude of subjects, from vaccines to Lyme disease to Gulf, the poisoning of the people in the Gulf, to pesticides. I mean, Rebecca Carley has been a tremendous resource for my listeners and for me. So after the 4th show, we got talking, and she told me a bit about her life, and I said, oh, my Lord, you're the lady I read about, and here I've interviewed you 4 times, and here you are in my life as an immensely important player in my fight against vaccines. So, all I can say, Rebecca, is would you kindly share your story with the audience, because I will not do it justice.
Okay, well, I'll have to give a short version because it's quite a long road to hell. But first of all, I left medicine in the early 90s. I was trained as a surgeon. I was working at the biggest trauma center in the United States, King County Hospital in Brooklyn, where I witnessed euthanasia, experimentation on poor people, and research fraud. And there came a point where I just decided I could not be involved with this corruption and fraud. And in fact, I was the person who went to Newsday, I think it was in 1991, and gave them the evidence they need to expose our then chairman of surgery, Bernard Chaffee, who had already been found to have committed research fraud, but of course it was covered up. And over the whole summer, they had a series of articles in Newsday. Of course, it wasn't just research fraud. He was misstaffing the emergency room. People were dying unnecessarily. It was a whole boatload of things that were happening. And in fact, eventually, he was forced to leave, but he wasn't fired. He was just basically told by the administration, you know, we're getting too much bad press, and he was forced to leave. Now, remembering that this man had been found to have committed research fraud, where did he go? To Lane University, where, as far as I know, things that happened that made me realize how corrupt my profession had become.
In fact, I had gone to the dean of medicine and told him what I knew, what I had witnessed in regards to this man, and was actually told it's a bad time to lose the chairman. So it's all a matter of connections, and obviously this man is a medical mason. If you don't know about the mason, you do some research. The medical mason's oath is to decide who will live and who will die. They're actually anti-Hippocratic. So that was my entry into a black hole, of which I did not want to go, because I had dreamed of becoming a doctor my whole life. I'm from a very poor family. Nobody made any calls. I had to do it all on my own, spending 17 years after high school in college, medical school, surgery residency, and then to throw it all away was not an easy thing. But I have a conscience, so that's what I did. I took time off to start a family. I had my only son, Joey, in 1996. Of course, the one thing I didn't know about was vaccination. We were taught in medical school that, you know, vaccines are this wonder that has, you know, been the best thing in medicine, you know, since sliced bread, basically. My son got all his vaccinations, and I watched him become brain damaged. And that's what started me to investigate vaccines, which I have been doing for about 16 years now, having accrued so much proof that vaccines are biological weapons, that they are being used intentionally for depopulation purposes, creation of disease. All of the diseases in internal medicine are caused by vaccines. It's not just autism. It's everything. And in pets as well. And that's me on a road to try to find a way to reverse the vaccine-induced damage, and that's what led me to homeopathy, and that's what led me to develop the protocol that I have developed, which actually reverses all vaccine-induced disease in people and in pets. And that's what I've been doing for about 16 years now. I have clients all over the world, and that's what I do, is teach them what I would do if I was they, because I do not practice medicine. I do not give medical advice. About 10 years after I left the hospital working environment, the New York State Medical Board, who had been diligently trying to find some way to go after me because I started a public access TV show in Long Island called What's Ailing America, which is also the name of my show now on Revolution Radio at freedomplus.com. Every Saturday from 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Studio B. And once I started talking about vaccines, it was really amazing, the things that started to happen. I realized that this was the sacred cow of the medical profession, and the most dangerous thing any doctor can do is step out of the box and talk about the source of all diseases. Because, of course, once you have a disease created, big pharma, you know, which basically has total control over medical school education, over doctors' licensing and all the rest of it, comes in with their drug and cures nothing, creates more side effects, but gets you hooked on whatever drug they're promoting. In 2002, I got a notice from the New York State Medical Board that I was being charged with a delusion of conspiracy. That's all they could come up with, because even when I was a surgeon, I never had this from any patient I was involved in. And remembering that at that point, I had already been doing non-medicine, you know, teaching people about natural ways to reverse their disease for many years. But I had done a particular public access TV show where I was exposing how governmental agencies were covering up the sexual abuse of children. And that was something that had happened to my only son. The corruption and fraud in this case goes up to the highest level in New York State government. Multiple governors have been involved. And so they started a year-long trial where they eventually decided that I did, in fact, have a delusion of conspiracy. Now, of course, the definition definition of delusion is a fixed false belief. I had a boatload of evidence that my beliefs were not false, that in fact these were facts, different things that had happened in the court to prove that, you know, they were involved in covering up what had happened to my son, who had been violently sexually abused by his biological father on Father's Day in 1999 when he was only 3 years old. And so, as I said, this hearing took over a year. The administrative judge, the way it works is that they prevent you from entering anything onto the into any evidence that actually proves your case. I had 10 psychologists and psychiatrists who had evaluated me. Each one found that I had no mental issues, despite the fact I had gone through this horrific experience where I actually lost my son. I've had no contact with him for over a decade. He's now in the hands of his abuser, and they stopped my visitation because the supervised visitation, you know, where I had two policemen with guns sitting a number of feet from me, my son kept begging me to save him, and they called this discussing the case. And so that's why they finally took away my visitation. As I said, I've had no contact with him for over a decade. I don't even know if he's still alive. But it was very interesting what happened, thanks to a fellow public access producer in Long Island who has a show that she's still replaying reruns of appearances I had on her public access TV show. She actually found out that the same year that the New York State Medical Board went after me, saying I had a delusion of conspiracy, that sex abuse was being covered up by high-level officials for, quote-unquote, certain people. It turns out that the New York State Medical Board had been made aware that there was a pedophile neurologist who had sexually assaulted over 100 autistic children. Philip Ryback is his name. And imagine the horror of a child who can't talk goes into the office with the doctor, and the doctor raped him. But eventually, this did come out. As I said, the New York State Medical Board knew all about it. They did absolutely nothing. The outrage by the public was so huge that the New York State Legislature eventually passed a law stating that the New York State Medical Board, and this is New York State law, I must turn over criminal doctors to the authorities. So the same medical board that said I was delusional because I was talking about how sex abuse of children was being covered up was covering it up themselves. At the end of the year-long hearing, which was absolute torture, I had slept in Manhattan. It was like once every week or 2 weeks for additional, you know, hearings. The judge did not allow any of the evidence from the 10 psychiatrists and psychologists into the case. That's how, as I said, they basically keep evidence out. But there was one particular psychologist by the name of Monty Weinstein who did come to testify in my behalf. And his punishment for doing so was that a SWAT team was sent to his office and basically, you know, to go after him on an IRS level to try to see if they could find some way to torture him for speaking out on my behalf. And after that, they tried to take away his license as well. So that's been my experience when that, so in other words, taking my only child away from me, that did destroy me. Then they went after my medical license. They eventually decided that my delusion was so severe. Now, even though I never had a complaint from any of my patients, even though I had many, many people who had had their diseases reversed with my protocol, that in order to keep my license, I would have to undergo psychiatric drugging, institutionalization, or electroshock therapy. And this is pretty amazing because here I am, the anti-drug doctor, and they want me to be drugged in order to keep my license. So my response to them was, I'm a teacher now. I teach
what I would do if I was they. I came up with an agreement contract that I give all my clients, informing them of that fact, and sent it to the medical board, and I've never heard from them again. So actually what happened in this process is that by no longer being licensed by the medical mafia, I am not able to be controlled by them. So that turned out to be a good thing. Of course, I have to live happening to my only child every day, and that is a severe assault on an emotional level.
What is unique about your case, beyond the glaring atrocity of it all, is that it ties in the medical, the judicial, the political faction all into the end of the immoral unto itself of child abuse, but quite frankly, the people who we know to be authorities, our elected officials and the legal system and the medical system, have all conspired to be your undoing, and in so doing, taking away your darling little boy.
Yes, and that is why it's really amazing to me that all of the different quote-unquote anti-vaccination groups have not helped me to get the word out about what's being done. Because, in fact, my case proves that. You know, I'm not important. What they've done to me is important because this shows how Big Pharma controls all of these different aspects of our corrupt system that you had mentioned. And I encourage the listeners to go to one of my websites, drcarley, C-A-R-L-E-Y.com. If you scroll down to the picture of myself and my son, I have posted a few documents that you can check out for yourself, including the foster mother's affidavit, what my son told her had happened to him, for she's a government employee, and testified for 2 days in court about things I didn't even know about. I went in front of the Nassau County Legislature with hundreds and hundreds of pages of documents and spoke at an open session. And the only non-corrupt person I've ever found that tried to help was a Nassau County Majority Council individual who wrote a letter to then Attorney General Elliot Spitzer telling him, and you can see this number 5 on that list of documents, telling him that she was very concerned about what was happening with my son and asking him to investigate the case. What did he do? He did not investigate the case. In fact, when I sued the most corrupt of the judges, Family Court Judge Richard Lawrence, in federal court, and people do not realize this. One of the main jobs of attorney generals is to represent corrupt judges and other officials at taxpayers' expense, and he actually got the case dismissed, stating that judges are immune, even if corrupt, malicious, or incompetent. That we all know that once Elliot Spitzer left the attorney general's office in New York State, he became governor of New York State. Then he became client 9. Who was basically, you know, forced to resign from office after the huge scandal that he was having sex with prostitutes crossing state lines. And amazingly, now he's running for New York comptroller. So anybody listening in New York State, I just want you to know, having sex with prostitutes is the least of what Mr. Spitzer has been involved in, because in fact, he was representing corrupt officials and covering up child sex abuse. So that's what people need to know.
Well, that's certainly laying it all out there, and I appreciate that because people really do need to know who their elected officials are, who is representing us. And as you say, having cheating on his wife would then be the least of what he's done.
Exactly. Well, but as I said, I want people to know that this is a job for all state attorney generals, and I'm sure it's for the holder person as well, that when there are charges of corruption in any government agency, wealthy or official. As it turns out, they're all immune. If corrupt malicious or incompetent, this is what we're paying our tax dollars for, is for them to be represented at taxpayers' expense by these psychopaths so that the cases can be dismissed and people have no way, you know, to get any kind of justice.
What have you learned about child abuse in this, in your journey?
Well, after I realized what was happening in my son's case, that then led me to a very important book called The Franklin Scandal. You can go to franklinscandal.com. As it turns out, many of the high-level officials, not only in this government, but globally, are pedophiles as well. And the author, Nick Bryant, who I've had as a guest on my show as well, has basically exposed, and as a matter of fact, I had brought that up in my New York State Medical Board hearings. Of course, they refused to allow that information into evidence as well. And so I realized that this is going on at the highest level. And actually, this is how they entrap and blackmail politicians. They have after-party parties in Washington, D.C. I mean, according to Mr. Bryant's book, this involves, you know, George Bush Sr., Dick Cheney. There's so many people that have basically been, you know, exposed as being pedophiles in this book. Now, of course, he's never been sued for libel and slander, because if that were to happen, they would have to allow the evidence he has into evidence, because basically there's no way that you can, you know, do a diversion and go into some other distraction when those very facts are what he has exposed in his book. The thing that I have had to learn is that the very people, high-level police officials, district attorneys, politicians at every level, are pedophiles. They have these after parties in New York City, in Washington, D.C., the District of Criminals. In this particular book that he wrote about, he exposed how there's this place called Boys Town, which is where, you know, children who had been physically abused or were in some way in danger, they would send them to Boys Town, and that's where they would go to get the children to abuse. Now, we've had a recent example of that at Pennsylvania State, the Jerry Sandusky case. His Second Mile nonprofit, where he was actually procuring boys, and I can guarantee you it wasn't just for anybody in his little group at Penn State that wanted to have sex with children. And this is the reason they had to shut him down real fast, to make sure that he didn't expose others involved, and very, very suspicious that FBI Director William Freeh was brought in to, quote-unquote, investigate the case. What you have to realize is that the FBI is totally, totally involved in the cover-up of child sex abuse, abduction, child sacrifice, satanic ritual abuse, all of it. As a matter of fact, the Department of Justice's own statistics say that 800,000 children go missing from this country every year. Now, you're not hearing about that on the mainstream media, because people might ask themselves, why isn't Nancy Grace talking about that? Why are they only talking about certain cases to distract and traumatize you with the horror of what's going on? In fact, this is so huge. And there was a man by the name of Ted Gunderson who was murdered about a year or two ago, who had come out publicly to expose what he learned working for the FBI, how one of the FBI's main jobs is to cover up the pedophiles at the high levels of government in this country. That's what you're paying your taxes for, people.
You know, I had about 15 questions while you were talking, and I'm not even sure which one. Okay. I just want to say that in Canada, the children who are being forced adopted are of children who are compromised mentally and physically. So obviously a lot of them vaccine injured. And in the United Kingdom, they have both passed the United Nations Rights of the Child, the Commission on the Rights of the Child, which takes away all the rights of the children and the parents. And basically, these children can be adopted, and they are targeting the injured children, at least in Canada. I know they are. So why do you think that is? Why are they targeting these injured children?
Well, what do you mean exactly by targeting them?
They're creating forced adoption scenarios for any reason whatsoever. I just saw an article about a landlord who said if you don't pay the rent, your children will be next. You know, so people can blackmail other people in this regard, and the state just owns your children. They can do whatever they want. You don't have to have done anything wrong.
Well, first of all, people have to realize, and this is, you know, I've learned so much as I've been going down the rabbit hole in all these different areas. As soon as you get a birth certificate and a social security number for your child, you don't own your child anymore. The child is owned by the government. And that is why the government is able to come in and try to mandate that the child get vaccinated or whatever the case may be, psychiatrically drugged. This is how parents are giving control of their children to the government in the first place. So that is why, if I was you, if you're going to bring another child into hell, I would suggest that you have the child at home with a midwife, no birth certificate, no social security number. That is the only way that you will actually have control over your child. But in fact, the government makes so much money off this foster care. As it turns out, whenever they put a child in foster care, they like to keep them there for 15 months because at that point, they pretty much maxed out on the money that they can get, which, of course, you know, CPS gets a cut and the judges, I'm sure, get a cut. So they like to do it for at least that long. Now, my son was very lucky. They took my son away from me because after he was violated so viciously that he couldn't walk or have a bowel movement for 2 weeks. I, as an ER attending, had actually taken photographs of sexually abused children. When I took my son to the hospital and the camera allegedly didn't work, I took one photograph of his bleeding anus. And that was used against me, saying that, you know, basically I had done pornography on my son, and that's how they put him into foster care. But my son had an excellent foster parent who, as I said, testified in court, and they were threatened for having done so. But this is a big moneymaker for the government, is to take children away from family. They make money in foster care. They put them in places where the children are used for child trafficking, child pornography, with vaccines and psychiatric drugs, basically a whole industry that is being used. And actually, if a parent, a foster parent, takes a child who is, quote-unquote, you know, special needs, they get more money for taking that child in. And, of course, this is another big motivation for the school. The schools get, as an average, pretty much $5,000 extra per year, per student who is neurologically damaged from vaccine. That's why the schools are so involved in making sure your children get vaccinated to go to school, never telling you if you can get vaccine exemptions. If the children become neurologically damaged, they get more cash. So
okay,
this is
there.
Go ahead.
Jeff, I want to bring up to you there. One is that I was interviewing John Gilmore of the Autism Action Network here in New York. He's actually out on an island. You might know him. I'm not sure. But regardless, he was saying that they will be putting vaccine clinics in the schools themselves. And I said, oh, you mean transient clinics, like they show up for a day, inoculate everyone, and then go to the next school? And he said, no, permanent clinic. Okay, that's one. And the other, oh, I can't hold more than one thought at a time. I'm sorry, I'm getting sprayed like an insect by chemtrails daily. So I literally have short-term memory loss at this point.
Okay, well, let me comment on that first. It's already being done in California. They've already passed a law that children can be vaccinated without their parents' knowledge or consent. And if this doesn't blow parents' minds and make them, you know, want to stand up and say this insanity has to stop, because, you know, the school has no right to do that. And actually, it's not even quote-unquote health clinics using vaccination. One of my listeners in New York had contacted me a couple of years ago that her child was brought into a dental clinic within the school. And basically, they tried to coerce the mother into allowing her child to get kind of an experimental dental treatment. And she said no. And they started, you know, trying to intimidate her to get her to go along with the program. People have to ask themselves, since when did schools become a place where your children get health treatment? Of course, it's not health, it's disease creation. Basically, when I went to school, you know, the school nurse couldn't give you an aspirin without your parents' consent. So how can it be that they are allowed to do all of these life-threatening treatments on children using them as lab rats? How does that work?
Well, this is all very disturbing. It's the first time I'd heard that we would have a vaccine clinic in school. So I'm encouraging everybody to homeschool at this point. I really don't feel that we have a choice. You know, you're encouraging home birth, and I hear you there. I was actually telling parents, if you're going to have a birth in the hospital, just to play it safe, get a religious exemption before you go, you know, before you have your first child, have a religious exemption. But, I mean, it's just crazy. I understand that they vaccinate the children when they take them to weigh them, even if you've indicated you don't want your child vaccinated.
Right. Well, one thing that I've learned over the years is that if you're having your child in the hospital, which is insane to begin with. All the things that happen in the hospital, the life-threatening superbugs, and on and on and on. It's probably better, in my opinion, to not tell them that you're against vaccines when the child is born. Because I've had so many clients who did that, and then they vaccinated the child anyway. If you tell them that you're going to wait until the child is older, until their immune system is more mature. In other words, if you don't notify them that you've done your homework on vaccines and you know their bioweapons, they may let the child escape without the hepatitis B jab. But I still suggest that the job of the fathers is that child, watch them like a hawk. Any place they bring the child, you must accompany the child, make sure you know what's going on. But one thing you can't avoid is they're going to take that child's DNA. They've been doing this for a few years now. Every child that is born has its DNA taken from a blood test, and that DNA is stored, you know, somewhere. I don't know if it's at the NSA or wherever it is. Your child's DNA can be used for any purpose, and, of course, the parents are not even told this. So there's so many reasons not to have your child in a hospital. And, you know, my goal is the same as yours, is to stop this insanity. We have to wake up a critical mass of people to face reality that vaccines are bioweapons. In fact, on the top of drcarley.com, you will see the legal definition of weapons of mass destruction, and you will realize that vaccines fit that description. But, of course, if the government is creating vaccines, which, of course, is one of the CDC's main jobs, there's a loophole for them. Basically, if there's a death or a disease caused by vaccination, you can't even sue the vaccine manufacturers. Thanks to Barbara Lofisher of the National Vaccine Information Center,
who went in front of Congress in the 1980s, we no longer have the right to sue Big Pharma. You have to go to a vaccine court, which is almost impossible to get a case heard to begin with because they have a certain number of days that your vaccine reaction has to manifest itself. And, of course, it can happen immediately. It can take months. So
well,
if,
I tell you, every single person I know who's finally got a diagnosis as vaccine injured, it has always come after whatever that time is that you have to file the paperwork.
Right.
So, like, the doctors are being told you cannot acknowledge this within this time frame because that will leave us this injury fund available to people. So not only do they injure the child, but then they put off associating one with the other, leaving the parents without any financial backing. And what's more, I understand there are only two people reviewing the paperwork for all these vaccine injured children. This is what I have been informed by a representative from Indiana State.
Right. But, you know, interestingly that they're the ones responsible for this happening in the first place. But, yes, of course this is true. In my many years of research, there's a police officer in Australia, Chris Savage, I've interviewed on my show, who actually had a severe reaction to a hepatitis B vaccine himself when he started getting calls to go to the homes of parents with dead babies. He started asking questions about their vaccine schedule. Next thing you know, he's out of the job. UK investigative journalist Christina England has also uncovered that medical examiners are not allowed to mention any vaccine possibility or causation of the death of the children. So this corruption goes up to such high levels. And as a matter of fact, even though seizures are admitted, is a possible vaccine reaction on many of the vaccine information statements, I've never had a single client ever tell me that their doctor would agree that, yes, in fact, the seizures were caused by the vaccine, even if the seizures started happening right after the vaccine.
Well, that's
how bad it is.
Another issue, because a woman I was interviewing about homeschooling was telling me about her friend, who she recognized what seizures were. So when she had her baby and her baby was having seizures, she said, "Why is my baby having seizures?" And the nurse said, "Because we just vaccinated her." I didn't say you could vaccinate her. And the nurse said, "Oh, yes, you did. Remember right before you had your baby, you signed this form, whatever was on that form that she was being given after God only knows how many hours in labor, that she signed this list. I know before I had my baby, I had to sign a form. And I was in labor for 22 hours. The kid wasn't coming out, so I had to sign a form. And I thought, did I also give permission for my child to be inoculated at that point? You know, I don't know. Maybe form. I remember my signature looked like a mountain. I have very legible handwriting. But I was in such, you know, I also had the flu, so I was sick. And I was in labor for 22 hours, and I form if they were going to give me a C-section. And what might have been on that form, what might have been that?
Okay, I don't know when I got cut off, but.
Oh, I see.
Anyways, the point is that I have reversed, as I said, over 4,000 cases of autism alone in the last 16 years or so I've been doing my protocol. And this is another big problem that I have, is that all of these autism groups know about my work. Most of them are talking about mercury, which is a total scam. Mercury and aluminum cause Alzheimer's. It has nothing to do with autism. It's actually the measles virus or the tissue cultures used to make the vaccine that caused this demyelination process in the brain. So they all know the truth, but they're basically lying to the people. And now I'm forgetting what your original question was. I know. I was going to tell you about the first client I ever had that I reversed the child's autism. He went for his vaccine. Now, this is a normal child, as they always are. Got his vaccine. By that afternoon, he was in grand mal seizures with a temperature of 105. When his parents called the pediatrician said, that's normal. That's normal after vaccine. How do you like that?
Well, I know when I was interviewing Michael Belkin of the Refusers, I presumed he had a vaccine-injured child, and I said, is your child vaccine-injured? And he laughed, and he said, no, she's dead. I'm like, oh. And so it was from the Hep B vaccine. And a friend of mine from Norway sent me an article when he heard the interview, and it said, child dies after Hep B vaccine. You open the article, it was four children in 2 days in the same hospital. But what I thought is that would be two children a day in every maternity ward around the world where they administer these tests. It's so hard to get these statistics because nobody's associating the death with the vaccine. So this article, even it was misleading. It said child dies, turns out four in 2 days. So, I mean, this is what has really lit an extra fire under me, is the murder of the innocent. Outright murder of the innocent.
Right. Well, before I respond, we have a question from the chat room. Boys Town, the old Gloucester orphanage. Yes, Boys Town. In fact, almost all cases of shaken baby syndrome are due to vaccine, and all cases of sudden infant death syndrome are due to vaccine. Now, the case of shaken baby syndrome is the most atrocious of all. Just imagine, you find your child dead in its crib. You would attempt to give CPR as your call from the ambulance, whatever. Giving CPR to a little baby, you know, can crack a rib or whatever, and actually the damage that's caused by the vaccine leads to subretinal hemorrhages, that bleeding behind the eyes, and certain other findings in the head, and they diagnose the child with shaken baby syndrome. You get charged with murder and go to jail for life. This has happened to so many parents, not just in this country, but in other quote-unquote Western countries as well. This is one way that they're covering up the murders.
Right. And in fact, you might have a child who died of AIDS, but if you link it to the vaccine, all of a sudden it becomes a shaken baby syndrome. Oh, you're going to... link it to the vaccine which caused it? Well, we have a solution for people like you.
As a matter of fact, I really suggest people go to backtruth.com and read the articles by Christina England. It's amazing some of the things that this woman has uncovered, including documents that prove that 30-year-old documents, secret documents that they have known for decades, that autism is actually subacute sclerosing panencephalitis caused by vaccination. But one of the stories she covered were some parents, I think it was in the UK, although she's in communication with people all over, parents whose child died right after vaccine, I think it was like 27 years ago. And these parents tried all this time to get a medical examiner to examine the child's remains for them and all these different things. And what actually ended up happening is they basically took every organ out of the child. They stole all the child's organs so that there was nothing left to examine. And they tried to hold out. This child has been in the deep freeze for, I think, 27 years. And uh-huh. The parents continue to try to find somebody to actually evaluate the self-evident case. And eventually what happened was that the parents were told that, we're taking your child out of deep freeze. We're not going to hold the child any longer, even though they were paying rent for the child in the deep freeze for all these years. So, yes, this is the extent to which they will go.